Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler. My guest today is Katie Stone, and Katie is on the Pacifica Network, and she's got a radio show called The Children's Hour. So, Katie, I watched on Zoom the play that you did with the kids a couple of weeks ago, and it was really great. So tell me how you got involved with the radio, community radio, and what contribution you feel community radio has made to not only your area, but you are on many other stations besides. So I'm so glad to talk to you, Katie. So how did you get started?
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you taking the time and talking to me. Thank you so much. Golly, community radio. I'm here in New Mexico, and we're a very large state in terms of area and small population. So the entire state of New Mexico is pretty enormous, but we only have 2 million people who live here. And the Children's Hour, my radio show, is on what we call the community public radio station, KUNM, in Albuquerque. That is where I got my start in at least doing the Children's Hour about 20 years ago as a volunteer, just like so many folks in public radio. And I took on a kids program that the station had, but it had quite a different format and a different name slightly. So I changed the name and kind of made it my own and refined what I did over 20 years. And my view of community radio really, really drives my mission, which is that community radio is a place where just regular people like you and me and people listening can be the content creators for the media that they consume. And when I was starting, I really was looking at children and how I had kids that were very little of my own 20 years ago. And I just didn't see a lot of opportunities for children to authentically help create the media that they consume, just like the rest of us do in community radio when we make our blues show or our folk show or this show or your show or the talk radio show. There really wasn't a place for kids to plug into that. And and so I made that place. And I right away opened the doors of the studio to any children who wanted to participate. And my initial crew was pretty small. It was a couple of homeschoolers and a son of a fellow DJ and my own son, who was just 3 at the time and a real compulsive button pusher. So he was very helpful in the studio live on the air. And we started inviting the community to bring in kids to the radio station who were doing cool things. So this is just a really simple way to have community engagement of kids of all ages. And now down the road here, it's 20 years later, I'm in about my 5th generation of working with children in radio. And there are about 35 kids who are on my crew. And every week we have participation from about anywhere from 12 to 25 kids, depending on the topic. And we just keep on keeping on in the same way. Again, I don't have any limits. There's no audition to be on the Children's Hour. But I do make sure that the kids are from New Mexico. And I do look actively for kids who are in communities that don't have opportunity. And so that's how we ended up being what we do. And I create an educational hour of radio where the kids typically interview some expert in a field. And they get grilled with questions that a kid would ask. But in the long run, the information that gets provided is something that is educational for everybody of all ages. And I mix all that together with some great music. And we are now on over 120 stations worldwide. And And that's a whole other story of how we got that far. But that, to me, is what community radio's real mission is bringing those voices that wouldn't get heard unless we did it. And it's really, you know, it's a way of changing the paradigm of who decides who gets to be on the radio. Community radio has the potential of being the great equalizer. And that's, I really hold fast to those values of public radio, of just giving voice to people who don't have voice. That, to me, is a really huge piece of what we do.
So 20 years ago, there was not the abundance of community radio as there is now, correct?
Well, you know, I was only working in my own little station 20 years ago. We only started national syndication 2 years ago. Not even.
Oh,
it's 2 years ago, June 1st. So that really speaks to the need for high-quality children's media in the radio landscape, and we're fulfilling that need. But 20 years ago, KUNM was an outlier then, and we're still an outlier station. KUNM airs NPR programming, Pacifica programming, and then has almost 100 volunteers who create all kinds of different programming. So we're a real hybrid station, and I do see that that is rarer and rarer, especially the hybrid with NPR. And so it's really great that we've been able to hold fast to that. But KUNM itself as a radio station had, and this is long before my time, in 1988, the station actually, the manager attempted to end all locally produced programming and just pull the plug and make everything be syndicated radio in 1988. And the community actually sued the radio station and won.
Wow.
And this community, the settlement of that lawsuit created a board of directors that in theory oversees programming on the station, and all programming decisions have to go through this board. And the board is comprised of stakeholders, you know, listeners, and the station is owned and licensed by the University of New Mexico. So they have some folks on there, you know, faculty members and staff members and students. And we, that radio board really helped keep KUNM as a radio station, a community collective station. But it was a battle at one point in 1988. And, I mean, it really, I mean, there were scabs who crossed the picket line. I mean, it was a big deal here in New Mexico when this happened. And there's some documentation you can look online. KUNM Radio Wars is what they called that. And it turned out that it was quite unusual. The listeners themselves organized to save KUNM, which is just incredible. But you'll find that that's the case everywhere with community radio, that our listeners love us and really value what we do and bringing these voices to air and giving opportunity to regular people to be participants in media. And so listeners will really go to bat for public radio, and that happened here, but way before my time. So by the time I got there, KUNM was already this hybrid station, and it had a dedicated hour to children's programming, and I took over that hour and just made it into something quite unique that I view as a good example of how to include community that folks are afraid of working with, like kids. Because kids are so unpredictable, people feel a little funny about, you know, like, do you trust kids in your studio to ask the governor a question? And I say, yes, 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 you trust the kids. Because that's how they learn, and that's how we all learn.
You know, we previously had a conversation, and I'm going to say it again right here on the show. You are the Mr. Rogers of community radio. You bring so much to the table, and I think it's at this particular juncture in the United States, I think that's so important, and I'm so glad I came across you.
Oh, thank you so much for saying that. You know, Mr. Rogers is absolutely one of my major influences. along with Jim Henson and the whole team over in Henson Productions. And one of the reasons that they were so incredible, I'm a child, I'm 52 this year, so I'm a child who was raised on, I'm the Sesame Street first generation, and Mr. Rogers, you know, was in my childhood as sort of a second dad. And I just, as a child, watched that and felt like that gentleness and that trusting adult is what every child needs. As an adult who really believes in them and who really tries to pull the best out of every child. And so I truly try. I appreciate that so much. I'm so flattered by that compliment. But we really do try to make it so that we're addressing so many of the critical gaps that are happening for children today and even children from a couple from the last couple generations. And we're sort of seeing the results now of what happens when there's no civics education in school. And look what happens in our country when we go an entire generation with very little attention to civics or public service or really hard STEM science stuff that doesn't – here in New Mexico, I was just appalled to find out when my children entered elementary school that science curriculum – was so bare bones, it wasn't even really happening. You could get away with, as a teacher here in New Mexico, because we had so much of a gap for reading and mathematics, your students might never get STEM education until sixth grade, which to me was just a crime. I mean, because the ages of the younger a child is when they're exposed to something novel and unique, like even just hatching butterflies, the more impact that might have on the direction they go in the future. And so I just became determined that here we were in the state of New Mexico, which has these two federally funded science labs that are the two of the biggest labs in the United States, Los Alamos National Lab and Sandia National Lab, both known for their weapons work and nuclear weapons. But here in New Mexico, they're also just science in general. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff happening at Sandia National Labs and solar and hydroelectric and all kinds of stuff is happening there. And so I started to think how crazy that we have some of the world's experts in all of these different fields here in New Mexico, and yet our kids are barely getting a science education. So I really started to think about all the different gaps in education and how we could try our best with our one little hour on the radio to make these sorts of topics really, really compelling for kids. And we have a sort of secret sauce to not turn off adults. So our show comes right after Morning Edition, an NPR news program on Saturdays. And, it, you know, there could be awful news at the end of Morning Edition. It could be just something terrible, you know. And we had to come after that, you know, and try to cater to kids. And so we really did our best to try to figure out, you know, what is the secret to get adults to not turn off the radio. And we've got some little tricks we use to keep our adult population engaged. But really what we're interested in are kids and families and trying to provide some of those gaps in education, fill them in a little bit, and even if it's just to pique curiosity. As a result, our programs are used in classrooms pretty commonly here in New Mexico to teach things that are, you know, civics and STEM and social-emotional learning and health education and other things we cover.
You know, what you do is totally, totally wonderful, totally amazing. You know, and I have been interested in, you know, podcasting and community radio for a number of years. And as I think about it and learn more about it, you know, the technology has opened up a whole new world with podcasting, with community radio, with blogging. But everybody does their own thing, and it's kind of balkanized. So there's not one clearinghouse for people, like-minded people, to share their ideas, to share their stories, to share their podcasts, their radio shows. And I think that's important. I think that's the next step, because mainstream media has become more and more consolidated, and you get like a few voices shaping people's consciousness when there's hundreds and maybe thousands of people out there talking about issues and that are really important, but nobody knows about them. Would you agree?
Well, yeah, totally. I completely agree with you. I mean, even our show, which has gotten so much traction around the world, I'm always amazed when people don't know it exists. But it's very difficult to get that exposure. And you're right about the balkanization. Everybody's kind of in their own world doing their own thing. And it's hard to cross-pollinate. One of the things I did during COVID was I started to reach out to other children's media producers. And I just initially was just looking around the United States, you know, who's doing children's media, who's syndicated, who's not syndicated, and what are they doing in their different in the different programs around the country. And so I started this little a Zoom meetup, and I kind of put out a little invitation to a few folks who I knew were in community radio around the country doing kids radio, and they spread the word to some of their friends. And by our third meeting, we had people from around the globe. I mean, we had people from Colombia and Puerto Rico and New Zealand and Australia and Thailand and Switzerland and the UK and Germany and Italy. And I mean, it was just great. And all across the United States and Canada and Mexico. And it was just so fabulous that, one by one, people were spreading the word about these different programs that exist. And so much of these little Zoom meetups were just like, tell us what you do. And it was so fascinating to hear how it's, in Puerto Rico, for example, children's radio is viewed as part of educational service. So it's every day on the public radio stations in Puerto Rico, and it's hours every day. And that's really neat. I was really impressed by that. The same thing is happening in Africa. In different parts of Africa, there are certain places where schooling is done by radio. And I didn't know that. That was pretty, the power of radio is amazing. And so I have really loved getting folks together. And really spinning out of that is an event that's about to happen on June 5th called Switch On Global Telethon, and that is World Environment Day. And this is being organized by the folks out of the Australian School Broadcast Network called Funky Kids Radio. And they have this 25-hour live broadcast that is going around the world. So it'll be live in the United States in the afternoon. I think it's like 2 to 6 in the afternoon. And a bunch of North American children's media producers and performers are going to be part of that. But anyway, in that global telethon, there's going to be bringing awareness to 25 critically endangered species around the globe from each area, and it'll end then on the 25th hour back in Australia, because that's where it started. And so that's kind of exciting, and that all came out of organizing people together. Like, what could we do together as a team? And now we're in all these crazy meetings trying to figure out how do you pass the torch for live broadcasting for 25 hours, from country to country to country, as the earth spins. And so I'm really proud to be part of that. We're going to be highlighting the black-footed ferret, which is a critically endangered species here in the United States that is slowly regaining population. And so I'm pretty excited about that, to let people know about how cloning might be a secret to helping species that have poor genetic diversity have a chance for survival. And the first black-footed ferret clone was created over the winter, Elizabeth Ann, and she was created from frozen cells that were frozen from her mother in 1987. So a long dead ferret, black-footed ferret, has created a clone baby. And
wow,
that is key. You know, black-footed ferrets, it's just, it's cool. I could go on and on. Black-footed ferrets were declared extinct for several years, and then a small population was discovered in Wyoming. But unfortunately, all the black-footed ferrets are related to that tiny little population from Wyoming, which makes them all cousins and brothers and sisters. And so the genetic diversity is really bad. And so the idea of cloning this totally unique ferret that, you know, from a completely different family from 1987 is, it could be species saving. And it's not the only species that needs that kind of intervention. But this is an example of what happens when we organize. So we organized as children's public radio DJs. I mean, what an obscure little category. And as a result, folks got motivated and created this really cool thing, the Switch On Global Telethon, and I'm pretty excited to be part of it. So we are balkanized, but, you know, we're balkanized because we're choosing that in a way. Like there are leaders among us who can step up and really try to let that not happen.
It's not
good people. But it takes somebody,
okay,
you know, to be organized.
Let me ask you this question. Now, your show originates out of New Mexico, and it's syndicated in other parts of the country, and you said the world. So what's happening in other parts of the country, they might not relate to the children in New Mexico. So do you concentrate on just kids in New Mexico? Because, you know, there might be some relevance in other parts of the country to have shows, kids included in that area into your show. Do you do anything like that?
That is such a good question. And we do have partnerships with other youth organizations where we create co-programming together, and we will air some programming on our show that's created by kids at other stations. For example, we work with a group called the Extinction Diaries, and they produce these one-minute pieces. And there are a bunch of indigenous kids out of Northern California, out of KFOI, which is another community-powered station in California, in Redding and Red Bluff. And but by and large, when I work directly with kids and my mentorship with kids and our crew is based in New Mexico, because New Mexico ranks usually 50th out of 50 states in terms of child well-being. Our state has some of the most adversely impacted kids by things like poverty, homelessness, hunger. 20% of children in the state of New Mexico face food scarcity every day. And that is much higher than the rest of the country. And we also have, so our population is in need of the programming that I offer, which is really considered almost like an after-school activity. If you look at it from a state point of view, that we get some funding from our state cultural services department, and they're really looking at us as an after-school activity in addition to being media creators. And why we are so focused on our kids is because we really feel our kids actually really need opportunity. But the second piece of that about, like, how is this relevant to kids in other parts of the country? You know, I really wondered this as well when I started the national syndication. How would it have meaning to talk about folk art, which New Mexico is known for having the Museum of International Folk Art, which is an incredible museum in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And we did a partnership with them and did a show with them last summer. And, you know, the very first thing I told the educator from the museum was, well, we're on all these stations all over the world, So how is folk art relevant around the world? And you need to keep that in mind as you're talking about your museum, because most of the kids who hear this show will never go see your museum. They're in Tennessee or New York or wherever they are, Maine or Alaska. And so it was really fun to have that conversation because, you know, folk art's a perfect example of folk art happens everywhere. And how do we define folk art? And what is folk art? And then the discussion with the kids became more about, well, what makes something art and something a craft? And then, like, well, that's like a fuzzy gray area for folk art. And so it really, we have found a way to, when we're talking about things that are here in New Mexico, for example, New Mexico's White Sands National Monument, which is a beautiful monument. It's known, anyone who's in the anti-nuclear world or pro-nuclear world will know that that's where the Trinity site was located, is in White Sands National Monument. But one of the things that was discovered only in the last 2 years in White Sands National Monument were embedded footprints from ancient people from, you know, 10 plus thousand years ago. Yeah. And their footprints are still in White Sands. You can still go see them, along with footprints of a giant sloth. And the giant sloth used to roam all over the Southwest. And I say giant, I mean like 6 to 8 feet tall, if you can imagine a sloth that's 6 to 8 feet tall. And it was hunting for food. And these footprints actually were able to tell the story of juveniles, so teenagers, hunting this sloth. And it's just, that's a story. The footprints are here in New Mexico, but the story is all of our story. The story of our country.
Katie,
it's the history.
Katie, our time is just about up. So give your call letters and how people
I would love
can...
to check us out. Definitely. We make all our content available. We don't charge any fees or anything for anything that Children's Hour produces. And we are at childrenshour.org. You can find all our podcasts, our current programming. We just released a musical that you mentioned, which we created during the pandemic. I'll call it a pandemic musical. It's called Icky. The kids actually helped write it along with a team of 17 creative professionals. There were 19 people on the cast, so it was a huge production. We did this all throughout COVID, and we just last night released the learning guide that goes with Icky, which is a terrific way to process what happened in the last year with children and adults. And its social emotional impact. And I'm so grateful you gave us the time. We're on stations all over the country, and you can find us at childrenshour.org. We stream the KUNM broadcast every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Mountain Time, which I think out there in New York is 11 a.m. And we love what we do. I feel so privileged to be in the role I'm in. And I urge folks who have ever had an interest in community radio to get over the fear, make the call, and jump in and become a volunteer. You never know where it will lead.
Thank you so much, Katie. I really enjoyed talking to you on this show. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a wonderful day.